Welcome to this week's edition of An Organic Conversation, a show about food, ecology, stories from the land, recipes, nature, sustainability, interconnectedness, relationships, and life itself. We're looking at biodynamic agriculture today, what it is, how it is applied, and where it all started, and what the world could learn from it. And of course, how it is different from organic food production, growing a philosophy, the art and science of biodynamic agriculture today in An Organic Conversation. We're your hosts, Helge Hellberg,
Mark Mulcahy,
and Sita Rani Palomar.
And Mark, you had some animal encounters of the third kind.
Yeah, yesterday I drove to Grass Valley, which is about 3 hours from my house. And so I got up at 5, drove up there, drove another 3 hours back. So my butt was just killing me. And what I mostly wanted to do is just go home and eat some dinner. And I just decided to, I pulled over and I said, I'm just going to go take a nice long walk, right? So I started walking, and then I started noticing that the grasses were out this spring, and so then I started looking for my favorite grass, which is rattlesnake grass. And when I bent down to get the rattlesnake grass, which I actually brought here, and I don't know if you can hear it in the mic.
Yes, you can. You might. Let me do the sound effect real quick, because it's really beautiful. It's called rattlesnake grass because when the wind moves it, it does this kind of sound.
And it's supposed to sound like a rattlesnake.
It sounds like it's instead of Helge's hand hitting the mic.
It actually looks like a rattlesnake's tail, too, which is the reason why I always thought it was called rattlesnake grass. But then a little snake scurried by at that point in time. And this is probably 6:30, 7 o'clock at night. So things are kind of shifting and the fog's coming over the hills because I live near the coastal range. And then I walk 20 more feet. And then there's this whole family of quail that come across my path. And then, you know, it's like everything was kind of stopping and looking like, kind of like, why are you here right now, right? We've got business going on. The world's happening. And the wind's kicking up and the grass is moving. And then I see a couple of birds still doing a mating dance. And then, of course, there's a fox that runs by the hills. And like I said, each one of them, we had these like eye contact. It was just kind of like... the whole evening. Then there was a vole who thought I didn't see it, but still had to turn to make sure I wasn't going to get too close.
Holding
then,
a leaf
and
over
then hid
his
under
eyes.
A leaf, yeah. Right? It's like, no, I can't see you. You did a good job, right? And all the horses were at the fences that I was walking by. And it was one of those, I just had a moment there where I was just like, okay, here I am. There's no one else around. And yet all the world is alive and happening. And because I was willing to get out of my car and off my butt and out into the world, this is what was presenting itself. I'm sure it goes on every day. This for me, it's just that I had the pleasure of being in that moment with everything around me. And it kind of felt like, oh boy, I'm just kind of here and one with everything right now. It was pretty awesome.
Yes, one living organism. And that's actually brings us right to biodynamic.
I think that this is when the magic really happens. I mean, there's so much potential for creativity, and I think we get into the offices, into the studios, and wherever we do our work in our business, and we try to create that magic there. But there's magic happening outside all the time. You need to have a little bit of both in order to have the best of either.
I'm actually thinking I need a lot more of the other.
Yeah. I hear
at
that.
Least right now. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
those
sure.
moments when you go camping, or I've seen a ringtail. I mean, how many people have seen a ringtail in nature? They are so shy and so well hidden and all that. And yeah, it was one of those afternoons where, you know, 4, 5, 6 different species of animals just showed up within 1 hour. So, yes, it is happening around us. And how do we live with it? It's the perfect segue. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
Today, we are looking at that segue. We are diving deep into the world of biodynamic agriculture, learning about what it is, how it's applied. And we have a phenomenal guest here in the studio with us, Jonathan Fry of Fry Vineyards, who's been running his vineyard for decades as a biodynamic farm, growing a philosophy, the art and science of biodynamic, our topic today, that and more when we come back. Stay tuned.
Are Are you a chef, have a catering business or planning a party, or simply just love organic produce? If you're in the San Francisco Bay Area, walk right in to Earl's Organic Produce. Anyone can buy directly from us at wholesale prices. You don't have to be a natural food store to enjoy the freshest and most delicious organic produce. We are located on the San Francisco Produce Market at 2101 Gerald Avenue. We look forward to seeing you.
Walk-in hours are Monday through Friday throughout the night from 10 p.m. to 10 a.m. Minimum purchase is one box or flat, cash or checks only. For more information, visit earlsorganic.com. Working from home is awesome, except when it's not. If you're working from your couch or your coffee shop, chances are you're not your most productive. For thousands of entrepreneurs, co-working is the answer. Next Space is a co-working company with offices in L.A. and the greater San Francisco Bay Area. Find an innovative workspace, a built-in community, and great networking opportunities at NextSpace. Visit nextspace.us for more information. NextSpace, your best work happens here.
Are you interested in making healthy food your profession? Bowman College is a leader in the field of holistic nutrition and culinary arts. Their professional training programs prepare individuals for successful careers as nutrition consultants and natural chefs. Study at one of four locations in California and Colorado, or learn from home in a self-paced mentor distance learning program. Find out more about their classes on holistic nutrition and culinary arts at BowmanCollege.org. That's B-A-U-M-A-N College.org.
And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
Our topic today is the art and science of biodynamic, which acknowledges the interrelationships between soils, plants, and animals, and seeing the farm as a living entity. What started just about 100 years ago in Germany out of a series of lectures on organic agriculture is now practiced in almost 50 countries around the world. Biodynamic agriculture is our topic today here on An Organic Conversation in just a minute. And as always, we are starting the show off with our weekly tip from the world of health and beauty. Here's Chef Sita and her holistic bite.
Thank you, Helga. Well, this week I am taking my inspiration from food. It's warming up and I find myself wanting to lighten up what I eat, because as much as I crave sandwiches and burritos on a pretty much minutely basis, I find that now is the time when I just want to eat more water-rich vegetables, and I'm looking for that perfect transport mechanism for all of those delicious ingredients that I'm used to putting in a burrito or a sandwich. And really, the best thing to do is to make your own lettuce wraps or lettuce cups. And so they really serve as a way to get things like garbanzo beans and olives and roasted red peppers into your mouth without getting your hands really dirty, or a sliced mango with fresh herbs and sesame cashews. There's so many things that you can enjoy wrapped up in a piece of green. So I wanted to share some of my tips on how you can make your own lettuce wraps at home, whether it is using traditional lettuce or it is using dark leafy greens. Things like romaine, butter lettuce cups, and leaves of kale and collards really make excellent transport mechanisms. And the long leaves of romaine lend themselves well to kind of putting strips of things. So if you're doing strips of mango, strips of carrot, put a strip of jicama, you can put a schmear in the middle with some mustard or some hummus or guacamole. But it's really great for those kind of longer, you want to eat it like a sub kind of foods. And then you have the butter lettuce, which curls around itself and makes these beautiful cups naturally by its shape. And the inner leaves, which are a little bit smaller and a little bit stiffer, lend themselves well to the kinds of ingredients that you would chop up, maybe diced avocado or chopped nuts, maybe rice and beans or the garbanzo beans and olives that I was talking about earlier. Those are great things to put into lettuce cups. And then you have the kale and the collard greens, which are undeniably good for you. And they have more fiber in them, or at least it leads me to believe they have more fiber in them, because they're a bit more cumbersome to chew than your lighter lettuces. So there are a couple things you can do with these, and I highly recommend making yourself a wrap up with one of these ingredients. They kind of act like a burrito or like a tortilla in that respect. So you could, if you enjoy that rougher texture, you could just remove the stem that's in the center and kind of overlap that hole that you've made and then fill your ingredients and roll it like it was a tortilla. Alternatively, you can marinate these greens, these dark leafy greens, with a little bit of oil. I like to use olive oil for this, and some salt or even some soy sauce, because the salt will help to start breaking down some of those fibers, which make it easier to roll, but also easier to chew and eat. And then the last thing that you could do with these, which makes them really pliable, would be to blanch them. So blanching, I've mentioned a couple times, this is kind of a basic culinary technique. It's usually called blanch and shock because it's a two-part method. And what you do is you get a pot of boiling water going, and then you add your vegetable, in this case, your kale leaves or your collard leaves, and you drop it into the boiling water for a very short amount of time. You want to see that color get really bright. It's going to soften it a little bit, and then you remove it and dunk it in ice water. And the ice water will shock it and keep it from cooking, but you've kind of broken it down enough so that it's really soft. It rolls around whatever kind of filling you want to put into it, and it allows you to get those delicious, tasty ingredients that you like to put on your sandwich or your burrito into something green so you feel a little bit lighter this summer season. And that was this week's Holistic Bite.
Wow, thank you.
I feel lighter thank already. So you got me thinking here. First of all, the salt thing, right? And so that's, I know that some chefs will use salt to massage kale, right?
Which is a really smart technique, whether you're going to do it as a wrap or if you have shredded kale salad. Actually, what that does is it also neutralizes the oxalic acid.
How does that work? Can you sum that up in
The massaging kale. So if you take either your shredded kale or your kale leaves, you put a little bit of salt. In this technique, you don't use olive oil at this point. You take a little bit of salt and then you literally massage it with your hands as if you wash your own hair and you really pay attention to moving your fingers on your scalp. That massaging technique, if we had a video here, you could see my hands doing this.
It looks
in the
like
studio.
She's can giving someone a shampoo.
Yeah. You're giving somebody shampoo. Mm-hmm. And you really want to kind of crush those leaves in your hand, and it allows the oxalic acid and juices and various things to come out. And what you're left with is this softer
so
leaf.
So you can do it as a whole leaf, too.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And then like Napa cabbage, maybe, too?
I've not done this with cabbage because one thing that I just love about cabbage is how crunchy it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So when I'm in the mood for cabbage, I'm in the mood for that crunch.
Right,
so
okay.
I wouldn't necessarily, I mean, you could certainly marinate it. I think if you massaged it, it may not hold the texture exactly the same way that your kale and collards do. You might bruise it more than you would soften it. But man, now I'm in the mood for some Napa cabbage.
There you go.
What I love about those wraps is that, you know, yes, flour tortilla or corn tortilla is wonderful. And yet if you don't want that, you get that extra big leaf of cabbage or whatever you use, kale, around it. It's like an extra portion of produce, which should make you really happy, Mark. while you're eating your veggie-filled lettuce wrap. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's just really, it's wonderful.
Should make everybody happy, actually.
It's wonderful. Lettuce, we love us. Thank you, Sita. That's Sita's Holistic Bite. And as always, the Holistic Bite is brought to you by the natural beauty company Ecobella. Ecobella offers a wonderful line of body care products and intelligent cosmetics. And of course, all of Ecobella products are preservative-free, gluten-free, and cruelty-free. Check it out, ecobella.com. That's ECCOBELLA.com. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Helberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
And we had a wonderful and quite emotional show on mothers a couple of weeks back for Mother's Day, where we here in the studio called our own moms at home, home being Germany, California, and Hawaii. Aloha, to have our moms share their best advice for beginning mothers out in the world. If you missed that episode, visit anorganicconversation.com or iTunes, where all of our shows are available as podcasts. You can also follow us on facebook.com/anorganicconversation for produce tips, recipes, political campaigns, and so much more. And of course, we love to hear from you. Please send us your comments or questions to share@anorganicconversation.com. Today, we are talking about a different kind of mother, Mother Earth. Growing a Philosophy, the Art and Science of Biodynamic, our topic here in an Organic Conversation today. And in this hour, we are looking at the beginnings, the early beginnings of biodynamic and organic agriculture, the practice and science behind it, and how it is applied at a farm. Our guest today has managed his operation biodynamically for decades and will share his observations and experience. With us here in the studio is Jonathan Fry, the general manager and co-owner of Fry Vineyards with his wife, Katrina, of course. Thanks for being here with us, Jonathan.
Wonderful. Yeah, thanks for having me here. Hi, everybody.
Hi. Biodynamic farming has been around for almost 100 years, and yet it's still relatively unfamiliar. People have maybe a kind of a general sense of what it could mean, but started by Rudolf Steiner, Rudolf Joseph Lawrence Steiner, in 1924, out of a series of lectures actually on organic agriculture. Where did the split between organic as we know it now and biodynamic begin? Like what came first?
First was biodynamic agriculture, certainly. This was in 1924. System of organic agriculture came later in, I believe, 1947 by J.I. Rodale, and that was when the first issue of Biodynamic Farming and Gardening was published. So biodynamic agriculture, therefore, could be seen as the very first of the kind of systems of modern organics, which were put together for the purpose of healing the earth, whatever that means. And that's a big topic, of course, going way back when to even classical times, people were struck by the damage that humans caused to the Earth's ecosystems due to logging, deforestation, and other things, and plants going extinct, such as silphium and so on. So this has been a concern of people for many, many years. And that also ties into the question, what are people even doing here in the first place? Some of the myths speak to that question. The people, Adam and Eve got kicked out of the garden. That kind of implies a separation right there of the humans from the ecosystem. At the same time, the humans clearly came out of the ecosystem, unless you happen to believe that aliens plopped us down here or something, which is kind of hard to buy into. So anyway, this schism between people and the ecosystem, their mother, as Helga said earlier, had 1800s and early 1900s, there was a lot more attention focused on those things.
So what did Steiner observe? I know he was a philosopher, really, and he was a scientist analyzing texts by Goethe. What did he observe? When did he make the connection to healing the land, to agriculture itself?
Well, that seemed to be rather late in his life when he put together his series of lectures in 1924. He passed away in 1925. And from my understanding of it, I'm really not an expert on Steiner, I have to say that, or on anthroposophy, which is his brand of philosophy. But he was asked by many farmers that he knew to come up with a system of agriculture which would address some of the weaknesses that were starting to show up in agriculture with the application of industrial strength chemicals and fertilizers and so on, going back to the mid-1800s with the synthesis of nitrate by Liebig, who is a well-known German chemist, and so on. So you got into the split of living versus non-living. And so as artificial substances, mostly a product of the war machine and economies that were happening then, started to be used on the land, and weaknesses started to show up in the agricultural products, like the bread wouldn't rise as quickly and so on. So the soil was kind of being stripped of its complex nature with more simple sort of junk food applications of these various kinds of industrial chemicals. And then you would get weaknesses in the plants. And of course, then the bugs would come in because the bugs can smell.
One weakness, really.
Yeah. And so they are just trying to correct a problem. The tissue of the plant becomes sweeter tasting under the influence of nitrate fertilizer, the over applications. So the bugs naturally move in. They're just trying to correct a natural imbalance, which is occurring. And so then, of course, you got to pull out your nerve gases that were used in warfare to kill all your bugs. And then you're on that treadmill that everybody knows so well.
So, yes, and that, of course, needed a more holistic response created by Rudolf Steiner. in 1924, Growing a Philosophy, the Art and Science of Biodynamic, our topic here today. And we're speaking with Jonathan, almost said Dr. Jonathan Fry.
Fry, Fry. Hardly.
He's got a degree just by sitting
the
here.
General manager, the general manager and co-owner of Fry Vineyards, the all-organic, the first all-organic and biodynamic vineyard in the country, producing all wonderful biodynamic and sulfite-free wine.
So, Jonathan, one of the themes that I'm hearing come up as you're describing what this definition of biodynamic is the idea of correcting an imbalance. So it's the idea of restoring balance, which to me means, yes, there's a lot of practical application of it, but there's also a real philosophy behind this. So what was it that attracted you to biodynamic agriculture?
Right. It was kind of a random path. Biodynamics, of course, means life power in Greek. So it's a real popular word and has a certain ring to it. I was studying astrophysics at the University of California at Santa Cruz, and I ran across Alan Chadwick, who was a pretty well-known in gardening circles, interesting kind of eccentric English ex-Shakespearean actor who was also a master gardener, and put together a couple of really incredible garden projects over the years back in the 1970s. And so it was through him I got turned on to the different aspects of farming or organically, and studied the early origins of these different movements. And Steiner, of course, was prominent in there with his putting forth of the biodynamic agriculture. And so tried to understand just exactly what he was talking about. Anybody who's read his works, they're very arcane and esoteric and quite dense. And most of them don't have much to do with agriculture. He was a member of a lot of the spiritualistic movements that were happening around the end of the 1800s. The Theosophists, for example, people have heard about them. But he started his own brand of human-friendly kind of philosophy called Anthroposophy, which is the study of humans. And then from that movement, some of the farmers, as we mentioned earlier, asked him for some tips on how to grow foodstuffs in a way that would make people fit in better with the ecosystem and to achieve this kind of a balance and possibly even try to enhance the ecosystem. That might sound arrogant or something.
And this just made so much sense to you that you decided, including your economic responsibility as the general manager and running a farming operation, to trust that system and place your farm.
Not exactly trust it. I didn't really bring it that much. We did put on some biodynamic preparations, they're called, which are some of the ingredients used in the agricultural system. Early on, when I came back, I worked out a deal with my folks to take over a small vineyard that they had there, and this is in the late 70s. Then later, my brother Luke really spearheaded making the biodynamic preparations for our farm.
What would they look like?
What do the biodynamic preparations look like?
Just a few examples.
They're kind of an intriguing mix of substances that are based on homeopathic principles. And homeopathy, of course, is a very interesting part of the field of healthcare. It was first formulated by Hahnemann back in the 1700s, I believe. And this basically says that living organisms are quite sensitive, and they can pick up very small amounts of various substances. So it's just kind of the vibe of this substance that's being passed along. Since the organism is alive, it's in tune with the rest of the ecosystem and the universe also. So these influences that are very fine and subtle, which are now being verified in physics, can be picked up. And so biodynamic agriculture includes certain preparations of substances from the rest of the larger ecosystem to stimulate and add to the banquet of fertilizer and food that the plants and animals are getting. So they have a much more complete diet, even to the fine energy or spiritual level, as they would call it then.
Okay, so now that you have me intrigued.
No. That's trouble. That's what happened to me, too.
Well, because now, it's like I've been in the organic industry for 30 years, right? Okay. And you people say, well, it's biodynamic, it's better than organic, or it's this or it's that. And you know, I've had a little bit of an explanation for them. And yet now that you're talking, because, you know, I've heard things about planting by the moon. I've heard things about, you know, taking the horn of a steer and doing some sort of preparation and burying it and things like that. And so that, you know, instantly
harvesting at specific times.
Harvesting. Like, so that instantly starts, you start going, okay, yeah, so now that you're talking about everything being connected and that, you know, everything being sensitive to everything else.
Right.
Where does all that kind of come into? I mean, because it's making sense to me, but where does all that kind of come into? Was that just part of his original philosophy around that it was connected to the cycles of the moon and the harvesting in the water? And
like, how would you know what to do at your vineyards looking at your when you first started with it?
Right.
What to do, what not to do?
Yeah, many people that work with the soil, they'll do soil tests. And of course, these are based on the old types of scientific testing that was done going back hundreds of years, where you would typically, in a very kind of a crude way, because you had no other way to understand what's happening with these organisms, you'd take them and burn them and see what shows up in the ash material. You'd collect the gases that come off it.
We still do that today, actually.
You try to separate it all out. You come to the concept of so-called elements, you know, the basic 100 or so elements. Most, you know, some of them aren't stable. Some are much more stable.
Periodic table, world.
Unstable and stable isotopes, and you know, et cetera. And so it's quite hard, really, from a human point of view, to fully understand what the heck's going on with all these living organisms. So they would, you know, use these rather crude methods. So then you come up with the substances and their various quantities and proportions that they have. And to go much deeper into the more subtle interactions of all the parts of a living organism, if you can even call them parts, is a very difficult proposition. Even now, we have a very poor understanding of how, you know, DNA works. The science of the epigenes has only been around for just a few years. They used to call it junk DNA. You guys probably hear all this stuff in context of the you know, biotech debates that are happening nowadays. So to really understand that, now to figure out what substances to actually use, Steiner would leapfrog all that scientific methodology, as I understand it. And he said that he had a power of being like he could see auras and stuff like that in terms of these subtle energies. And so that's where it gets kind of far out, and that's where you definitely lose your scientists. And so he put together this package of super potentized you know, fertilizers, if you will, which were called the biodynamic preparations. And maybe a little bit of background I could throw in. He was actually being bugged pretty strongly by quite a few farmers to lay out some of his concepts on how to create a kind of agriculture which would heal the planet, because Steiner and the people around him were pretty freaked out by what was happening then. And I think you'd have to look at the kind of social context that they were in. Central Europe had just come out of a horrible war, World War I. As students of World War I know, that was a very freaky kind of experience. It sort of came out of nowhere, and people were kind of naive about the damage that it would cause. And everybody thought it'd be over in a few weeks or months, and dragged on with horrible cost. And everybody could see that something pretty ugly was coming down the pike, too, in terms of World War II. And so there was a lot of kind of anxiety over which way the earth was going in terms of the destructiveness of these wars and so on. And so it grew directly out of that, and as a way to try to deal with this problem. Has some you know, very interesting kinds of you know, his historical precedents to it.
Mm-hmm. Often, actually, it does. Those movements come from a time of despair or, you know, of distress in whatever form. Out of that, of those ashes, literally comes the next solution and the healing power of the next movement. We are talking about Mother Earth today, growing a philosophy, the art and science of biodynamic. We have Jonathan Fry here in the studio with us, who, with his wife Katrina Fry, co-owns and manages Fry Vineyards, an all-organic and biodynamically operation vineyard producing biodynamic wine since 1980. We'll take a quick break and we'll be right back with more. Stay tuned.
At Eden Foods, we've always strived to have a strong, positive impact on farming practices and food processing techniques. As the oldest natural and organic food company in North America, our business practices and products endeavor to contribute to a peaceful evolution on Earth. We encourage everyone to be knowledgeable, discerning, and proactively involve buyers, as we are. Look for organic grains, beans, beverages, and more by Eden Foods at your local co-ops, natural food stores, and online at edenfoods.com.
Are you committed to green, socially responsible, and sustainable business practices? Percepticon can help with eco-friendly internet solutions, website design services, e-commerce solutions, mobile apps, and high-performance internet hosting for your business. Percepticon is a full-service agency that specializes in web consulting, strategy, and technology development, so you can successfully communicate with your audience. Lighten your tech footprint in a green hosting environment. Call Percepticon today at 925-937-9000 or visit them at Percepticon.com.
SPUD stands for Sustainable Produce Urban Delivery. SPUD delivers the highest quality organic produce and the best locally sourced grocery items one can find directly to your doorstep. It's easy, it's convenient, and it supports your local economy. On every delivery day, SPUD takes at least 100 cars off the road that would have otherwise been driving to the grocery store. Reduce your carbon footprint, save time, and save money when grocery shopping with SPUD. Place your order today at spud.com. That's SPUD.com.
First class of fancy free. She's high society. She's got the best of everything.
And we're back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
Our topic today is the art and science of biodynamic, which acknowledges the interrelationships of soil, plants, and animals and seeing a farm really as a living entity. What started just about 90 years ago in Germany out of a series of lectures on organic agriculture is now practiced in almost 50 countries around the world. And we have Jonathan Fry here with us in the studio, who general manages and co-owns Fry Vineyards, the only certified organic biodynamic, or the first certified organic biodynamic vineyard in the country. Jonathan, we talked about what fascinated you and the history a little bit on biodynamic. As far as I understand, it's certified by Demeter. That's the certification body. So when you certify something as biodynamic, there is a set of guidelines or some, you know, standards, whatever you want to call it, but like a menu of things you can do and things you cannot do. How does that work in biodynamic? How do you know what to do every year?
With most systems of agriculture that are in the natural farming sector, they do have certifying agencies. For example, in the U.S., we have the National Organic Program and then the various certifiers that are under that, and they have a set of standards, of course. The Demeter Group was first started in 1928. This was 4 years after Steiner's lectures and 3 years after he passed away. And so this was put together as a working group of farmers more. They didn't focus so much on standards, as I understand it, but mostly kind of a framework for farmers to think about biodynamic agriculture and to even come up with new preparations. Steiner made it pretty clear, I think, at the end of his lectures that this was just sort of a stepping off point. But this group was started, and that became the certifying agency for biodynamic farming, and it's still going strong. We have one here in the U.S. and also over in Europe.
And do they come to your farm? Like an organic, I know
Correct.
It's a mandatory inspection once a year when you're certified organic, that you have this 600-page document that tells you what is restricted, what is allowed, and what is prohibited in organic. It's pretty straightforward. Is that the same process roughly in biodynamic? Do you have,
sure.
you have somebody come to the farm and check up on your operation?
Yeah, there's a farm inspector that comes out. I used to do farm inspections for CCOF back in the 80s.
That's organic, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this was pre-National Organic Program. The Demeter farming methods aren't officially recognized by the USDA because their standard is higher than the
yes.
than the National Organic Program, and so they don't recognize a higher standard. But they still are recognized, and they're pretty much in harmony. But the Demeter certification group has various people that work for it, and they come out to the farm every year, and they just do a typical farm inspection, as would happen with any kind of organic farm.
They look at your soil and how you store materials and
correct.
What you do and fertility and
yeah,
all that.
Paper trail and so on.
Great. Yeah.
Well, so I'm wondering is what have you observed on your – I mean, you know, you said with 70s you started this 20 acres of – organic and biodynamic vineyard, right?
Yeah, these were planted in the 60s. We had some vineyard in our place. And so we, after I came back from school, I worked out a deal with my dad to manage the vineyard and sell the grapes. And then we started making some wine there too.
And what? And so what do you, what's your observation, you know, in the farm and in the world? I mean, obviously you're not just making preparations and you're not just following organic rules. You're living there, and you're with the land. And so, what are your observations around being on the land out there?
Well, certainly, if you live in any part of land, you'd like to live in the middle of a vibrant, healthy ecosystem. So you want to keep it that way. Preferably, you'd want to make it even more vibrant than it was when you got there. Anybody who walks into a certain kind of a garden, let's say managed, you're suddenly aware of the buzzing of the bees, kind of like the moment that Mark talked about driving back from the foothills yesterday. And so those are the kinds of places. I think that's what the word biodynamic is talking about, life power, so to speak, when the interrelated parts of the ecosystem are really humming and the creativity is at a maximum and then new things can come out of it, you know, including new kinds of creatures. There's an incredible well of creativity that is there to be tapped, maybe. Who the heck knows what would happen in the future?
Mm-hmm. I hear some really beautiful guidelines in what you're saying about how we might live our lives biodynamically off the farm, about harmony, about life power, about healing the land. So if you could take this philosophy and use it as a way to recommend a more harmonious way of life, what would you summarize?
What would I summarize?
What would you summarize?
You said like leaving the place better than when you found it, right? That's a really beautiful notion. If we treated the world as our garden, you know, what can we contribute to leave it better? That's
yeah. Going back to that idea that people did come out of the ecosystem. I mean, I'm not trying to anthropomorphize, I guess, but people did come out of the ecosystem. Whether they're what kind of force they will play in it, and why they were made, or you know why that happened. Those are the kind of questions that they like to ponder, even though they run up against, in you know philosophical terms, stuff like the anthropic principle and so on. So, of course, a lot of people, but it's a useful tool, I think, to look at it that way, and it makes it more user friendly if you think of the ecosystem as being your home and where you came from. Now,
well, you have a very special role, right? You're a farm owner. You are a husband and you're a father. So there's this, you have really, you're the perfect example for me, somebody who lives off of the land and with the land every single day. And yet you're in society like everyone else, you know, selling certified organic and biodynamic wine, but you're also a husband and a father. If you look at biodynamic and your life, what's the most valuable thing that it showed you?
Well, certainly, just like with any type of agricultural pursuit or even anybody living, you look forward to the future you know, generations of people that will come. So to be mindful of that is probably a good idea and might even help you out in your own realm. And we don't really live off the land. I mean, we're not hunter-gatherers anymore. And so we're tied in with the larger worldwide scene, certainly. But to you know, they talk about how, getting back to the fertilization aspects of biodynamics, the animals that live in the wild, they often will eat certain plants. The self-medication of animals is a popular topic nowadays. And so people are barely getting a clue of the different substances and molecules that are created by all the different parts of the ecosystem and how they all tie together. And so biodynamics tries to mimic that in a certain way by putting together these complex biodynamic preparations, which is part of their fertilization scheme, and that way giving the plants and animals a much richer, varied diet in an energetic sense. They're in contact now with all these other plants and animals from throughout the ecosystem as well, to give them a much more richer kind of experience through the energies that are passed through the fertilization.
Well, that's
materials.
Definitely a great metaphor, both for diet as well as for culture, for us as humans. If we learn from that, the more biodiverse we can be, the more diverse we can be as a society in all of our practices, the better we are off.
Pick up tips from the other members of the ecosystem, so to speak. And I think people nowadays, they're starting to get a clue also about just how fine-tuned or dialed in, if you will, the ecosystem may or may not be. And so getting a handle on that and making that a part of your food production is very kind of intriguing.
Lovely, yes. Continue to be observed.
And of course, it ties into the biotech emphasis and the argument over GMOs and how crude that is and how long a ways it has to go to get an understanding.
Yes, and we did have a couple of shows on that too. Mark, do you have any last remarks? You look like you do.
I'm just fascinated. I mean, it's just my mind is reeling here. And so I just...
Let it reel.
What it really does is it's funny. You just ended what you were saying, Jonathan, with, you know, GMOs and the crude nature of that science. And even though it's called science, I've always felt like it was a very disrespectful way of being in the universe. And so it just kind of ties it all back. You can't be completely observing if you are not paying attention to the whole organism.
Science is catching up now. I mean, that's really all these philosophies are now more or less being proven every year. There's something new. Fascinating. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
And with us was Jonathan Frey. Thanks, Jonathan, for coming in today. We're out of time to dive into this even deeper, but we shall in the future. Our topic today was the art and science of biodynamic, which acknowledges and celebrates the interrelationship of soil, plants, and animals, and seeing the farm as a living entity. Thanks for all your wisdom and for being our guest today. Pleasure to have you. And what's coming up out of that world of biodiversity is What's in Season, the produce tip of the week with our very own Mark Mulcahy. That and more when we come back. Stay tuned.
Produce is ever-changing, seasons coming and going. At Earls Organic, we have been sourcing solely organic produce for over 20 years. Since 1988, Earls Organic Produce has been establishing strong relationships with growers and developing a deep understanding of the seasons, so you can offer the most delicious organic produce to your customers, staff, and clients year-round. For organic produce, visit Earls Organic Produce at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Fry Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Fry organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Fry Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines, without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Working from home is awesome, except when it's not. If you're working from your couch or your coffee shop, chances are you're not your most productive. For thousands of entrepreneurs, co-working is the answer. NextSpace is a co-working company with offices in LA and the greater San Francisco Bay Area. Find an innovative workspace, a built-in community, and great networking opportunities at NextSpace. Visit nextspace.us for more information. NextSpace, your best work happens here.
Oh, little darling of mine, I care for the life of me. Remember a Saturday, I know they say let it be. Just don't work out that way. And the course of a lifetime runs over and over again.
And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helga Helberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
Beautiful show on Biodynamic with Jonathan Fry of Fry Vineyards. All Biodynamic Organic Vineyard in Mendocino County. Beautiful Mendocino County. That's frywine.com. Check it out for more information on biodynamic and organic practices right there. And out of that world, we are slivering into the world of produce. Mark.
Yeah, we are.
the weekly tip of what's going on in the world of produce. Here's Mark Mulcahy and what's in season.
Well, Earl and I have been talking and looking at exactly what's going on out there in the market. And, you know, being the middle of the end of May right now, then you're going to start seeing something that I think actually this is one fruit that causes a feeding frenzy. when people first see cherries... When people first see cherries, people go crazy. They'll actually get into elbowing matches around the cherry boxes right at the farmer's market. And so the first cherries are coming into the market right now. And, of course, on the line we've got Earl, the voice of the San Francisco produce market, Earl Herrick of Earl's Organic Produce. And he's going to kind of talk to us a little bit about, you know, it's the early season and what's going on.
Hey, Earl.
You there?
Hey.
Hey.
Good morning.
Welcome,
Good morning.
Earl.
Cherry season.
Well, you know it is, and that's one of the reasons why prices are so high, because it is a feeding frenzy when the cherries first come out. I mean, the demand is so pent up that you can get some very big money, and that's what you should expect at this time of year, but that is going to fall as the season continues. So right now, it's the very beginning of the season. You may see $10 a pound more. But as that season continues, it's going to be very promotable, I would say, in about 2 weeks. So in the early season, you're going to see varieties like a Brooks, a Tulare, a Coral, even a Chelan. Now, some of those varieties you may not even be familiar with because the stores are just going to call them, what, the dark sweet cherry, right?
Yeah, dark red cherry is what you see all the time, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but by the end of May, we're going to see the first of the California Bings, and by then, I think you're going to start seeing stores have very promotable pricing. They're going to really get going with that. So the California season runs through May into June, and then it travels north up in Oregon and Washington and eventually all the way up into British Columbia.
And well, Bing is king, you know, right? Bing is king, I hear you guys say all the time.
Well,
that is one. He is king, yes.
Well, and so Earl, one of the things that the reason I wanted to talk about cherries right now with these early varieties is they're good, right? I mean, yeah. I wouldn't describe them as great. And I want to make sure that people know that when they're so excited around these cherries and the price is high and you're buying bags of cherries, is that they're going to be good. But they are not going to completely satisfy that cherry fix that you want, right?
Well, I would, you know, I think the first ones might, and they're just going to whet your appetite for the real deal, which is the Bing is King, because the early varieties are kind of a softer texture cherry, and you know, like you say, they're just not as satisfying. They're mild and sweet and softer. When that Bing comes, you get that crunch, that deep. Dark color, and the sweetness is just off the charts. And that is the memory that gets satisfied, and that's why we keep on coming back every year waiting for those cherries.
And that's why we buy them early at $9 a pound, so that, and then we go, I still need to wait 2 weeks.
The flavor is better, and yeah. The price is better, which means you can eat more of them.
Which means you can eat more of them, exactly.
And you're so sick of strawberries at that point, because you've eaten strawberries since, you know, March, April.
May. Is it possible to be sick of strawberries?
Sorry, I apologize. No, you're not. But I remember a year where I went to a U-Pick field for, you know, a couple of weekends in a row, and I ate so many strawberries that I had a major belly ache as a little boy, and then I was just done with them for the year. I could not look at strawberries. And then the cherries came. And it was really like the Giants versus Atlanta Braves. It was like strawberries versus cherries. And cherries so pushed it out of the park. It was ridiculous. For the next 3 months, the Bing in Germany, beautiful. Just a wonderful summer. And yeah.
Well, I mean, how do you top that? Earl, do you have something else you'd like to cut?
Oh, yes. Well, you know, we're looking at a great season. I want to make that point.
Nice.
Should be a very, very, very good supply. We're going to see some really good pricing. This is a year that you can get your fill of cherries. Now, California will go up into the Northwest, so the, you know, the season really gets extended. Bings will come on, and then Bings will leave, and then Bings will come on again as we get up into Washington. So, you know, we got a good May through September.
Well, and, you know, when you're looking at those cherries, you're probably seeing more coming from California because the crop has doubled since 1990 with the output of California cherries.
So with the output of you. Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's right. Well, if I can get past you at the cherry boxes. So, Earl, thank you so much. Always great to have you on the show. Really appreciate your insight. And we'll look forward to talking to you next week.
Bing is king.
Great.
Yes.
Thanks, Earl.
Thanks, Earl.
And just a couple quick
Earl is king.
A couple of quick tips when you're elbowing Elga out of the way at the cherry box is when you get them, you want to look for firm, shiny fruit. You want to look for a deep, deep red because they're not all going to be deep red. And you will see people literally picking cherry by cherry. And you also want to look for green stems, which aren't always easy to find because sometimes they get broken off in the box. But if you see, you know, brown stems, it means the cherry's old. You should just leave it to the side. And then lastly, when you get them home, you can store them tightly sealed in a plastic bag. And theoretically, they'll hold up for 2 weeks. And the theoretical part of this is because you know darn well in your house that is never going
to
eat. That's never going
to
happen. They'll last about a day.
They store for 2 weeks.
Well, I'm just saying they can. And that's theoretically because they won't last because you'll eat them all. Yeah. So, yeah, that's what's in season.
So looking forward to it.
Me too.
Before we get into your favorite recipe, Sita, which I want to ask you, how do you, I mean, you just, you know, eat them and spit the pit.
That is what I do, yes.
Yes. What's a good, as a produce manager, if somebody comes up and say, how do I de-pit them really simply, quickly?
A few different tips. I mean, there's actually a couple different things. I've seen where the people have taken those little cones that go on a pastry tube?
Ice cream. Yeah.
And then you stick that on your counter and you just put your cherry down on that and that works well. I mean, you get juice. You have to make sure you got to be aware that you're going to get juice around.
Don't wear a white shirt.
If you wear a white shirt, then you'll definitely know you did. Kind of like pomegranate juice. But also, I've seen people put a nail down into a board and then just use a nail to knock it out. And then there's also a technique where you can use a paper clip to get it out of there. But really, my favorite way is to just put them in my mouth and then spit those pits and then see if I can actually meet the world record.
Which we actually looked up for this segment, and it's what, 100
feet? It's 93 and a half feet in worldwide, 63.5 feet in the U.S.
Yeah, not that you're exact, but 90 feet, that's 30 yards. I think that's
longer than first base to home plate.
Unbelievable. That's unbelievable. I don't know how he or she did that. But yeah, 100. You try that at home and let us know if you come
close. How far you got.
Sita, what would you do with them other than, of course, eating them while you're on your way home?
Well, there are lots of things that you can do with cherries, but I'm like remembering this amazing Black Forest cake that I had last year with fresh Bing cherries.
Oh, wow.
We were actually really fortunate. It was for Helga's birthday. We were all celebrating, and we invited our dear friend, Casey Coletti, from Casey's Culinary Adventures, to make a gluten-free Black Forest cake. And knowing that Helga is German, she really went out and got the most authentic ingredients, fresh cherries. Unbelievable. It's all I can think about. And it's, you know, I'm not saying that making a black cherry or Black Forest cherry cake is the easiest cherry recipe you can do, but I'm still thinking about it a year later, so it might be worth trying.
Question to our associate producer, Kristen Ponger, back there. Can we repost that recipe, Casey Coletti? She was on the show.
I don't think she gave us the recipe
for
Black
Forest. Oh, can we get that recipe and pop it up, please?
Well, actually, I think I need to try that cake again to make sure it's first. Worth putting up.
Well, we better invite Casey for another episode.
Yeah, when we do, Kristen, can we get that?
Hi, guys. Absolutely. Okay. I'll get it from Casey and we'll post it.
Wonderful. And that's, of course, Kristen Ponger, our associate producer. Thanks, Kristen. We're on it. Cherry season is here. Bing is king. And that was
this week's edition of An Organic Conversation. Thanks for listening.
An Organic Conversation is a proud production of the Organic Media Network. Associate producer, Kristen Ponger. Studio engineer, Robert Costa. Underwriting production, Mark Van Gelder. Thank you all.
If you missed parts of this show or for any other episode, go to iTunes or anorganicconversation.com.
And you can follow us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/ An Organic Conversation.
We're your hosts, Helge Hellberg,
Mark Mulcahy,
and Sita Rani Palomar.
And we'll be back right here, same place, same time next week. See you then.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Because love keeps on traveling, keeps on traveling. Makes me feel like no matter how far, I'm still with you. But love, can you try?